from the west coast of Norway, the 10th of May. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show. Coming up this week, is gravel and ultra racing rife with cheating? We ask after accusations fly at the recent premier event in Europe and try and see what can be done to sort it. Plus, Ollie Bridgewood is sabotaged twice at the Fred Whitten Challenge. There's a new bike from Canyon that you've been asking for. A pair of cyclists who've claimed not one, but three world records by cycling around the planet. Plus, make sure you stick around till the end for a choice nugget in which I reveal my invention that's going to make me millions.
Really?
This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Hollywood is making a film about doping an aging pro cyclist back to winning ways.
Yeah, and Natalie Portman, of all people, is starring as the evil doctor. Now, I will be honest, Dan, I'm quite glad that she was not lurking around pro cycling back in the day, because I'm pretty sure she could convince me to do anything.
Just like actually text me about this news at the weekend, didn't you?
I think it's amazing. Natalie Portman in cycling. It doesn't get any better
than
that.
We can see you're excited.
So. Yeah, okay, right.
We also learned that someone was out to get Ollie Bridgewood at his favourite event of the year, the Fred Whitten. According to Ollie himself, somebody sabotaged his Di2 outside a cafe the day before the event.
Yeah, he took a photo, didn't he, and said that someone had cut the Di2 cable clean.
Yeah, but in that photo, it doesn't look like a clean cut.
It really doesn't.
Unless someone did it with their teeth.
Yeah, well, I mean, you never know with these saboteurs, do you? But worse was to happen the next morning at the race start. Have a look.
I mean, banana skin, chain on, somebody lubed up the bottom of his shoes. We don't really know.
No.
Either way, went arse over tits. Thankfully, Ollie did recover, except for his ego, of course.
Yeah.
He rode really quite fast around the Fred Whitten on Sunday, and he'll tell you more about that in a video that's going out next weekend.
Yeah, and believe us, he cannot wait to tell you about it either. He has already sent the entire office individual messages about his heroics and his normalised power. And he has, in fact, even come up with a new hashtag.
How is he?
Hashtag mass is gas.
Oh, with his newfound muscle mass.
That's
lovely.
It, yeah.
What he forgot was hashtag cycling shoes are slippery, wasn't it? I missed that one. Anyway, finally this week, we learned that gravel racing is potentially rife with cheating.
Yeah, controversial statement, but evidence has kind of been stacking up. So last week, we spoke about the tracker in Girona, where it turns out there has been, well, particularly a little bit of hoo-ha around the winner of the men's 560-kilometre ultra event, but actually across all of the races to a certain extent.
The issues mainly stem from the fact that gravel racing is now attracting money, and where money goes, trouble is sure to follow. At least in cycling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, probably lots of places. Yeah. But yeah, ultimately, people are unlikely to take big risks for a little bit of prestige, are they? But wave a cheque in front of someone's face and that will probably change.
A cheque?
A cheque, yeah.
A cheque, sorry, you are showing your age. Yeah. But we do all have our price side, don't we?
We
you
do.
Just said yours is a conversation with a certain Natalie Portman.
True, yeah. Now, in gravel racing now, there are a lot of people getting some pretty serious money from big cycling brands, right? Much like in pro road racing. But the question is, have the events and all of the kind of infrastructure caught up with this?
Before we get onto that, so I think we should stress that this isn't an issue for the mass participation side of gravel. At least you would have to be a massive loser to cheat on that side of things.
You would.
Although I'm sure some people might and some people probably have.
Statistically, Dan, there will be some losers doing big gravel races, I suspect.
Like us on Saturday.
Well, yeah, except we're not losers in that way, are you?
Very different sense of losers.
Indeed, yeah. Now, the issues at the track of 560 stem from the fact that the race is being run in a way that is okay for mass participation, right? Because it's ultimately an adventure on 560 kilometres of amazing Catalan gravel, but it's not perhaps watertight enough for serious ultra people, which 5 years ago would have been an oxymoron, wouldn't it? But it definitely isn't anymore.
Our own colleague Max from GCN en Francais said that the rider trackers didn't work properly. So even though he crossed the line in 11th place, he's been given 14th in the results with a time that was 30 minutes slower than what he has on his own Strava.
Yeah, Strava doesn't lie down. Now, annoying for sure, right? But not, you know, it's not dodgy, is it? But it emerged soon after the race finished that the men's winner, Victor Pessoni, had deviated from the course six times, apparently, cutting a total of 400 metres.
Not load, is it, over 560k?
Not
load. Still. The organiser said, though, that it's still valid, Pessoni's ride, whilst Pessoni said it was a series of small missteps rather than intentional cheating.
Yeah, now I have only done one ultra. Mine was 640.
No longer.
Just saying, yeah. And I can easily see how you would end up deviating from a GPS route, especially in the middle of the night or whatever. But equally, your head unit will tell you when you've gone the wrong way, right? So you could quite easily chuck a U-turn to correct it unless you didn't want to. And certainly, we've got to say, Pessoni managed to stick rigidly to a GPS trace when he won the Atlas race.
Well, that is true, yeah. And actually, Connor said the results there had only been made official months after, once the organiser had scrutinised everybody's GPX files.
Yeah, which is probably what's needed. Now, I'm sure there is some simple software somewhere, that could quickly check everyone's GPX traces before the riders then get to jump on the podium.
Well, what could we think of for that? Strava, maybe?
Yeah, create a giant segment, 560 kilometres long. If Strava says it's okay, it's okay. Now, what I will say I find a little bit worse than that is the lack of drug testing, okay? So Lifetime GP has dope testing. Fairly watertight, we think. The UCI World Gravel Series has testing, and of course the World Championships do. But not all gravel events do, even the big, prestigious ones.
Which really isn't good enough at this point, is it? So it reminds me, actually, of mountain biking back in the 90s when we got into it, Si.
Yeah.
There's a point where suddenly loads of fairly average road pros saw how much money could be made in the mountain bike discipline, and so they switched over, unfortunately for mountain biking, bringing EPO over with them.
Yeah, it was all pretty sordid, wasn't it? They went very fast, but it was a bit rank. But it wasn't all one way, though, was it? We should give a big shout-out to Michael Rasmussen. He was world mountain bike champ cross-country in 1999, but he didn't get ejected from the Tour de France until 2007.
No. Whilst infamously wearing the yellow jersey as race leader at the time. One thing I do remember, though, about Jerome Ciotti, who's one of those mountain bikers, the great thing about him was that he gave his championship's jersey back, didn't he? He said that he thought that mountain biking was the same as road at the time, but once he found out that the likes of Thomas Frischknecht were riding clean, he felt really guilty for obvious reasons and actually did the due diligence of giving it back.
Yeah, that is true, actually.
Anyway, I digress. This gravel scene does feel, well, I'm not going to say similar,
it could
that.
Be, right?
It could be similar to that. It's open for those sorts of cheats.
Once bitten, twice shy, they say, Dan.
I'm not for one minute saying that people are cheating in gravel racing right now, but we have been here before, as you point out, Si. And so we know that the testing does need to catch up, including out-of-competition testing, importantly.
Exactly. No one wants to be cast under this net, right? This suspicion. I get that. But equally, no clean rider, I think, would object to the premise of greater scrutiny, right? Like, as we said, what we get at the Lifetime GP and the World Championships.
No, I think all of the top riders currently would really welcome that to the bigger races. But even within the races themselves, there are some other issues. Alex, as you may have seen at the weekend, was racing in the pro race back at the Tracker.
You probably won't have seen him in the results, though.
No, well, it depends.
Took a bit of scrolling, didn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's only 50 per page. So it's not scrolling as much as clicking the next page.
And the next one. Anyway,
Alex noticed, as he was sliding back through the groups of the lead women's race, that there was one male rider, without a number on, riding with a female pro and essentially acting as support for her.
Yeah. I mean, one, that's cheeky. And two, that's also kind of creepy, isn't it, really? Plus, women pros have long been calling this out as the risk of having different categories racing on the course at the same time. And it really is wildly unacceptable.
No, absolutely. And a shame that it's a tiny minority of racers creating the issue in the first place. Now, we should probably say again that the general consensus is that almost all gravel racing competitors are playing by the rules. The spirit of gravel is generally still alive and well from what we hear, but it is an example of where the UCI do play a pivotal role in cycling. we may not like all the regulations that the UCI put in place, or sometimes even how they implement them, but they govern the sport and they do their best to ensure a level playing field.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say that people don't cheat in UCI sanctioned races, is it? Because pro cycling has an infamously long history of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of well known within cycling and outside of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it is important there is a framework in place and then clear guidelines as to what is and isn't allowed in your discipline of the sport.
That's right, yeah. If you get caught, you get busted. Mm. Right. The question is then, what can be done about these potential issues in gravel? Like, is it just a growing pain? Because as we said, that shouldn't affect gravel racing or events for the rest of us, right? So does this mean that this problem is just for pros?
Well, there's a great article by Logan Jones-Wilkins over on Velo, which dived deeply into the issues surrounding the tracker this year specifically. And in it, he concludes with a statement from the tracker organisers themselves that they would be changing the 560 for next year to answer some of the criticism levelled against this 2026 version of the race.
Yeah, which is cool, isn't it? I think as the sport evolves so rapidly, we should say the tracker had apparently just 100 participants in 2019.
Wow.
Not very long ago, really. It will have to evolve, both the organisation and the rules, to keep up, right? And Alex said he had an absolute blast at the event and would 100% be back next year. So we know that they're getting most things right for most people, but I suspect it will come down to organisers at, well, not just that event, but lots of events that are just going to need to invest money in anti-doping measures and other kind of integrity measures if they want to keep pros and elites happy and then have results that are valid, I guess.
Do you think most people care who actually wins those races?
How do you mean?
Well, exactly that. Sorry. Lifetime do a great job of creating a narrative around the season of the winners, but it's not road racing levels of interest in the results, really, is what I'm trying to say.
No.
And I don't want to demean gravel pros, not at all, but do people talk about who won? Unless it's like a big name road rider, Wout van Aert on Sunday, for example, in the Netherlands.
Well, I mean, that is true. Yeah, I mean, I was more interested in the results of Marley Grav when I know that Wout van Aert had won it. You're right. There are other races, like Unbound, where we're interested in the winner because Unbound is so prestigious and it doesn't matter who it is. You then learn about, you know, who they are and how good they are. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people, pros, on gravel, fighting for not much media attention. And, you know, so yeah, there are a lot of names there that I don't know.
No. No, I think it's as important for the current gravel pro crop to get as much exposure as they can, and that doesn't just mean winning on gravel, does it? It's all about the influencing as well.
Well, yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because if you're a brand investing in gravel, so to speak, in some regards, it doesn't matter who you've got unless it's like a marquee name, like a Keegan Swenson or someone, because just having someone racing at the sharp end like validates your product. Do you know what I mean? Like they might not be generating the interest themselves, but the events to generate the interest and then the brand can capitalise on it. So maybe it doesn't matter too much.
Like you said, I mean, it's just the evolution of gravel has been so quick and it's got professional in such a rapid rise to the top. The framework just hasn't been able to keep up with it,
I
don't think, at this point, but I'm sure it will catch up.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to know, of course, what you all think about this. I mean, firstly, do you care who wins gravel races? Is this like a storm in a teacup or is it relevant for all gravel races? And then secondly, do you think that there is an issue there about gravel races maybe needing to do a little bit of extra work in order to make sure that the results are fair and watertight? Get involved in the comments section.
Yeah, we're interested to hear from you. Right, before we move on, a quick promotion of the GCN shop. If you didn't see last week, we've got some brand new T-shirts that we're wearing now. There's also a few more designs now
at
shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com. Side to celebrate the first men's grand tour of the season.
Oh, nice.
That's not just the T-shirts, though. We've also got the two Camelback water bottles just next to Si here. Coveted.
And highly coveted.
The Malia Rosa print, which is available in A3, which you see here, and A4 sizes. As we keep saying, the prints have been incredibly popular so far this year, so thank you very much to everyone who's already made a purchase. If you'd like to do so, there is a QR code on screen right now, or, as I said, the website address is shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
Yeah, remember as well, we're looking for photos of GCN cribs. So if you've got GCN prints up in a stylish apartment or maybe an office space, maybe even a paint cave, then let us know, because we like looking at nice houses, don't we?
You can do that at globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
cycling shorts now, and we will start with the news of Canyon's new Aero Endurance bike, which is released today. It's the Endurace CF-SLX.
Si has taken a close look at it for a video on GCN Tech, but just in case you don't want to watch that, tell us the headlines.
Why would you not want to watch that?
I'm just saying, you know, people that might be busy this weekend.
All right, okay. Well, depending on which way you look at it, Dan, it's either a mega aero endurance bike or an aero bike with endurance geometry and additional features. So it's not quite as fast as Canyon's Aero, nor the Vanderpool Special Edition Endurace CFR that was released just before Paris-Roubaix. So it's 5 and 4 watts slower at 45k an hour. So not very much. But notably, it is still faster than a bunch of bikes that are actually being raced in the World Tour.
That is quite impressive.
Yeah, I thought so. It has got the traditional Canyon Endurance geometry that you were all clamouring for. Then it's also got hidden fender mounts. That's an upgrade over the previous version.
Is that mudguards?
Yes. Well, yeah, they're called Defend Fast Fenders.
Okay.
So it's quite hard to say Defend Fast Fender mudguards. Mm. Anyway, that's my explanation.
You got it out?
Yeah, onboard storage as well. And what was really cool is that the pricing seems really competitive.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. The Ortega Di2 model with a power meter retails for €4,499, and the entry-level CF-SL model, which has a different frame set, still carbon though, sits at €1,600.
Not bad, that.
Right, something a little bit different now. Here in the UK, a father and son have just returned from cycling around the world together, earning not just one, but 3 world records in the process.
Yeah, I would say not a bad day out, but it took them 400 days. Now, they got the fastest father and son to ride around the world. Then they got the furthest distance cycle.
Yeah, 26,519 kilometres.
By a father and son. And the most countries visited in one continuous journey by a father and son.
It's a really cool story, isn't it?
Really cool.
So far, they have raised £70,000 for UNICEF, but poor George has come home to an epic list of jobs from his wife, who was left holding the fort at home for over a year.
I can't believe that bit. I think staying at home is far more impressive than going riding around the world for 400 days.
Like,
holding
the
fort,
your point.
To be quite honest, yeah.
Right, from father and son to brothers, back in the day, Russell and Dean Downing were legends of the UK racing scene, with Russell eventually turning pro for Team Sky. He won the Tour de Wallonie and the Tour of Ireland, amongst other races, during his career.
Yeah, he also won the very prestigious Lincoln Grand Prix here in the UK 4 times, and then Dean also won it once as well. Mm. And, I mean, it is, without doubt, aside from the national champs, like, the crown jewel.
It's a proper race, a proper crowd.
The UK's scene.
They were both proper races, I would describe them as, back in their day, weren't they? Anyway, the two of them made a vow last winter to get back into shape and try to amass enough points in racing to qualify for the event this year, and they did it. So after months of training and a few preparation races, both of them lined up in Lincoln for the race last Sunday.
Yeah, unfortunately, neither of them finished the race, but to be fair, 100 other riders didn't finish either. But it's kind of not really the point. Dean is 51 now, and to even make it onto the start line, having amassed enough points and qualified in the first place, is an amazing achievement in itself.
I think to put things into perspective, Si, both Russell and Dean are older than I am.
I mean, that puts the pressure on you for your comeback, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But to be fair, you didn't win the Lincoln. So you've got to get out of jail for
it. I think I only did it once.
Did you?
Yeah.
I used to love that race.
Yeah, it was a good race, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, twice, I think, I finished 3rd to Russell and Dean.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I got to the final climb with them twice, and then they just put me away.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great to see that, and they've got fit in the process, so it's a win-win.
Yes.
Well done to Ollie Wood, incidentally, and Morven Yeoman for their respective wins in the men's and women's races.
Well, important to get that in. Now, sticking with racing, one Grand Tour concluded last week, and another kicked off. So in the women's Vuelta, Paula Blassi continued her incredible ascendancy to take the win at her first time of trying.
It really is unbelievable, this rise to the top. So Blassi's got a background in running and duathlon, only turning pro on the road just under a year ago at this point. But she's now won La Vuelta and Amstel Gold, finished on the podium at Flèche Wallonne, and fifth at Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
I think that's what you call talent. It's like, yeah. And now the scary thing is, she probably has quite a bit of room for improvement as well. So the rest of the women's peloton had better watch out. Mm-hmm. Now, meanwhile, the Giro d'Italia for the men has had its first three stages in Bulgaria. The headlines are that Paul Magnier is dominating the sprints. Guillermo Thomas Silva is the first Uruguayan to win a stage and then take the leader's jersey in any Grand Tour, giving him and XDS Astana the dream start. Yeah. But seven riders have also already abandoned.
Yes, unfortunately, there was a huge crash on the second stage, which was wet. UAE Team Emirates came off worse, so three of their eight riders have already had to leave the race. Soler, Vine and Adam Yates with a fractured pelvis, elbow and concussion, respectively.
Whoa, that's savage, isn't it? We wish them all a very speedy recovery. Now, moving on, we've talked a lot in recent weeks about e-bikes and e-bike legislation. Clearly, it is a hot topic right now because every country and every state seems to be drafting some new legislation or other.
It's the turn of Massachusetts this week, putting forward a bill that actually sounds quite sensible.
Potentially.
Classing different micro-mobility options from normal bikes through e-bikes to scooters based on speed.
Yeah, even right up to electric motorbikes that always get called e-bikes. And now, essentially, anything designed for or limited to less than 20 miles an hour is considered tier zero and is treated like a regular bike, which is also in tier zero. And then it goes up to tier four, which is 40 miles an hour plus and will be treated like a motor vehicle.
The only thing that seems a little bit weird is 28 mile per hour e-bikes still allowed to use bike infrastructure. That does seem kind of weird to me.
A bit quick.
It's fast, 28 yeah. miles an hour.
I mean, it would seem like that to you. Because
I can't remember the last time I got to 28 miles an hour.
Well, exactly, yeah. Maybe as a pro, you'd have been a bit happier with it.
Yeah.
But no, I completely agree with you. Actually, jokes aside, that's way too quick for cycling infrastructure. Right, now, sticking with e-bikes, in what is perhaps a sign of the times, sad one at that, Porsche, closed their e-bike division. Now, it's not like we saw a great deal from them, but still.
It's still a bit sad.
It is a little bit sad.
It's demise already, isn't it? Some news from Canada now. Nothing about harsh winters, you'll be
That's
pleased
good,
to know.
Yeah.
But rather, the announcement from Cycling Canada that they've decided to cancel the Women's Team Pursuit programme on the track for this year. As such, they are no longer sending a women's team to the World Championships on the track later this year.
Cycling Canada responded to the criticism rightly levelled at them from the riders and many others by saying that they had conducted a performance and budgetary review and that they didn't believe the team could be good enough to qualify for and be competitive at the 2028 Olympic Games.
But you can see why the women's team is very disgruntled, because their results in recent track competitions have been quite comparable with the men's team, who are still being sent to the World Championships later on this year.
Yeah. Now, I don't know much about this story, Dan, but I can absolutely see why they're pretty peeved.
Well, exactly, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like... And there must be more to it than
probably,
that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like an absolute disgrace when you look at it. Or sounds like it looks like a disgrace.
Yeah. Well, if you want more information, I think Cycling Magazine Canada, I was looking at the information. There's a letter from the riders to the Federation and then one that returns a letter back.
I will do that, Dan, before passing any more judgment. Right. Now, this time last year, you might remember that Dan was busy training for the longest ride of his life. You might remember because he told us about it a lot.
Yes, continue to do so.
350 kilometres or 220 miles, which is a long way from Manchester all the way down to London to raise money for the Ambitious About Autism charity.
Mm. I didn't take any shortcuts either, so.
Did you not?
No.
It's probably because it's 400 meters. One long line, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I'm not doing it again this year, but I have to say that was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had on a bike.
You get a bit delirious, is that why?
What, on the ride?
Yeah.
Towards the end, yeah, a little bit. A little bit. Anyway, if it's something that does take your fancy at home, there are apparently still a few entries left for this year's event, which takes place on Sunday, the 28th of June. As I said, I can thoroughly recommend it. You don't have to be a super fast cyclist to take part either.
Clearly.
Whole range of abilities there each year, and everyone feels the same level of enormous accomplishment when they reach that finish line in London.
Yeah, we will put a link in the description below if you would like to find out more. And maybe sign up for the ride yourself this year. All funds raised go to an amazing cause. Yeah, it has to be said again.
Well worth it. Next up then, an apology. Sorry about this. We completely forgot last week to announce the winner of our Wahoo giveaway. So very sorry about that.
Yeah.
I won't keep you in suspense any longer. The winner of the Wahoo Rome V3 is...
You said no more suspense, didn't you?
Oh,
sorry.
Great joke.
Thanks. Gwyn Davies.
Nice one.
Congratulations.
Gwyn. If somebody from here at GCN has not already been in touch with you, hopefully they will be by now. But if they haven't, they will be soon. Well done again. Next up, it is time for Hack /Bodge of the Week. GlobalCyclingNetwork.com/uploader to get involved in this part of the show. Our first one this week comes in from Joel Flinjet Jordet. $8.59 DIY office bike storage.
Well, that looks cool.
I needed a way to store my bike when I commute into my stuffy insurance office, so I tossed this together. I saw a spare piece of wood from the pile at the garage hook and told the maintenance guy I was going to start sinking nails until it worked. He smartly stepped in to assist at this point, and voila, it looks almost as tight as Si's haircut.
Boom!
You're not getting your haircut before we go to Australia?
No. Yeah. I mean,
I timed mine perfectly.
You did? Well, you know, basically, I think I look great. So I feel like I'll wait until it looks crap and then I'll go.
poor old Joe's like, are they going to decide whether this is a hack or a bodge?
I like it.
We're just going to talk about each other's haircuts.
I'm assuming it's a compliment about my hair, but no, I like that. I think that's really cool. Yeah. And what a great way to make your stuffy insurance office feel like something a bit cooler, you know?
Yeah.
Something to remind you of what you love doing.
Fantastic. Yeah, hack
I love
for me
that.
As well.
Yeah, nice looking bike too. Okay, next one. Phil Hoz, saddlebag/tracker radar issue solution. Goodness me. After fitting my new saddlebag so I can do a test ride ahead of a couple of big Audax events later this year, there wasn't any space left to fit my Wahoo Tracker radar unit. Fitting it down on one of the seat stays wasn't really viable because part of its line of sight would be hindered by the rear wheel, and also the rear light would be too low to the ground for my liking. So after rummaging through all the gubbins in my joinery cupboard, God, that's quite cool. Who's got a joinery cupboard? Amazing. And a couple of online purchases, I had an old L bracket, which I shaped and painted, a couple of long slotted L brackets, and a light mount from Restart. This is so complicated, yeah. I'm lost. I have my solution. It's perfectly under the saddlebag, giving a wild, wide field of view, and has so far been absolutely bombproof.
There is quite a lot going on. I mean, if you've got two L brackets to fit a light, I think that's called over-engineering, surely.
Yeah, I mean, it looks okay, doesn't it? But I just wonder whether there was a simpler solution of attaching it to the bag.
Yeah, well, it definitely feels like there was a simpler solution. I'm not despite my invention I'm going to tell you about later on in the show, I'm not qualified to come up with said simpler solution.
Yeah.
But
well,
I'm
anyway,
sure somebody more clever than I could do so.
I think we've got to say hack, because it's well-engineered.
Yeah.
So, Phil... Well done for that.
Well done, Phil.
Yeah. But I'm glad it's not on my bike. Can I say that?
You can say that, I think.
I'm glad it's not on my bike, yeah. Phil. Right, what's next?
I mean, Si's been very fastidious about his bike setup for 7 Gravel, haven't he? Started stressing about the type of chain wax he's going to use. He's properly stressing.
Well,
just an hour ago.
So I haven't done a gravel race with a wax chain yet, so I'm a little bit nervous, okay? And Alex was like, look, it's absolutely fine, mate. Like, don't worry about it. I've just done a tracky, yada, yada. Anyway, I used the Cyclo Wax Core Wax to wax my chain. Yeah. And Alex was like, ooh, you used the Core Wax? I was like, yeah. He was like, well, it doesn't last quite as long as the performance or the race wax. I was like, what do you mean? And he was just like, well, they've got extra additives in to lower the friction and increase longevity. So I'm there going like, well, I really don't want like a chain related issue in the middle of this race that we've flown literally halfway around the world for, and I've actually done some training for. So anyway, I reopened my bike bag, took the chain off said bike, and I've given it to Alex to wax.
As we speak, poor Alex is having to wax Si's chain for it.
Yeah, because he knows that he completely cracked me. So anyway, I think I've got the race wax going on. So
Well, I'd already done mine in race wax.
Well, yeah, how you got your mitts on it, I don't know.
At the weekend, not even during work time.
Well, I did mine at the weekend. And that's why I'm really annoyed, because I spent actual time. Anyway.
All right, let's move on.
Never mind, yeah.
Next one comes in from Jamie, who put a literal seat tube. Rear saddle bolt came loose on the Lincoln Grand Prix, never to be seen again. Used a butyl inner tube to strap the seat down to the seat tube and finish the ride. Saddle even stayed on after the Michael Gate cobbles.
No way. Well, that's a roadside hack, if ever there was one.
I'm surprised that stayed put.
Yeah, well, I am too. Yeah, that's amazing.
If that worked as well as you said it did, fair play.
Absolutely,
yeah. Hack from me.
Just goes to show there's still a place in the world for a butyl inner tube.
Or just in the last one, this is good.
What is the last one? Sent in by Adrian Malmberg. Banana banana storage. Amazing. So this, as you can see from the picture, is a reference to last week's 3D printed banana storage. And it is, for podcast listeners, a picture of someone holding a mug with a banana wedged on the side.
A peeled banana, yeah.
Yes. I didn't want to put the banana straight on the couch, so this hat got me to drink the coffee and have my hands free. I'm a genius. I tell you what, I wouldn't drink a coffee and eat a banana, would you?
No.
That's controversial.
You don't like bananas, do you?
Well, I mean, I do like bananas, but I hate them on bike rides because they make me really hungry.
Or with coffee.
Oh, I wouldn't have it with coffee either, no.
I bet. I've never thought about it, but I've also never done it, which presumably means I also wouldn't do it.
No. Weirdly, though, I would love a piece of banana cake with my coffee. So maybe I'm just... Maybe I just need to... Maybe I just need to, like, open my mind a little bit more.
Probably, yeah. Quite, yeah. Angela. Right. Thanks for your submissions this week. We look forward to seeing what you send us in for next week's show. Done from Australia.
Time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second after we have dealt with the not-so-small matter of last week's results.
Last week's photo was this one of David Godu of Groupama FDJ in a field at the prologue of the Tour de Romandie. Kind of a bit of a cropper, but thankfully soft landing.
Hey, ba-dum-ts.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even realise I'd done that. Our winner this week is Gabe McKeown. I always knew he was a legend. He's outstanding in his field. Which I thought was great.
That is absolutely brilliant. Well done, Gabe. A well-deserved Camelback water bottle for you this week.
And apologies if I've completely screwed up your surname. What do you reckon it is? McCoon?
McKeown?
McKeown? Anyway, probably made it even worse. This week, I'll get in touch on Facebook with your address. We'll send the bottle out to you. This week's photo also comes from last week's Tour de Romandie. Here it is. Do you want to describe it for podcast listeners?
This is what made me laugh last week as well. So in the foreground, we can see a field of cows. They look like quite benign cows, don't they?
Yeah.
And then in the middle distance, we can see a line of riders on a road. But the way the picture is so beautifully constructed, it looks like the riders are coming straight out of the arse of one of the cows.
Yeah.
It's genius, trust me.
Right, I will get you started. That's bullshit. No, that's cow. Hopefully you got that with bleeps.
I don't even think you needed the second bit.
Yeah. Well, I decided they were cows rather than...
Oh, boys. I see what you mean. You have been... okay, right, just in case anyone sorted you in the comments. Right, okay, stick your caption in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. From Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN this week whilst we're in Australia. But first up, a few comments from underneath last week's videos. Starting underneath last week's show, Gixxer 750 Pilot... Did you just say Gixxer?
I literally just said Gixxer.
Yeah. Told me I'd pronounce it. I've already got it wrong 2 seconds later.
Only because someone corrected us. Okay. Apparently it's a motorbike thing.
Oh, okay. Mm. Gixxer 750 Pilot. Should have saved that for a nugget at the end. That's what the croc thought. This is about our story of somebody getting eaten by a crocodile on a golf course.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, alligator, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What expat said... Cy Richardson, is the big cat more or less dangerous than the cow? I am one of the vaunted 19 viewers. Oh, we've got a few more now hanging on to the end of the show.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, folks.
Like an exponential rise in viewers at the end of the video.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the issue is that this big cat was running away from me, so I'm probably more scared of being mauled by, like, a panther than I would be
trampled
a single cow. But... Well, actually, no, having said that, if it was a bull in a field, definitely wouldn't go in there.
No.
But then I wouldn't go in there if there was a panther either. I put them on a par.
But if there's only two fields and you have to go through one, which one are you going through?
The bull, because I think I don't know.
Panthers are fast.
Yeah, but bulls are fast.
Not as fast as panthers.
It's a dilemma. Could you help me out? In the comments section, can somebody please let me know which one is more dangerous, panther or bull?
Not even the nugget. Not even the nugget.
No.
Right, underneath Alex's video where he joined the Canyon Pro team for the tracker, he did the 200-kilometre event.
He did.
Mr. Brackley ATA, Alex, you said you found it humbling seeing the Canyon ATR team walking past. As I rolled in hours after you, there you were sitting on that stone doing your bits to camera. it's all relative. We rode the same route and shared the experience. What a great day, and thank you for doing this film that captures my own experience and memory so well.
That's cool, isn't it? Yeah, nice one. And then we had this lovely comment from Purist Geek as well. Music was so on point, amazing video as always. So yeah, shout out to Liam who put that one together.
A couple of longer comments underneath the video about the cycling midlife crisis, which went out on Saturday. Mark Bezzi, 47, smoked since 13, had a heart attack last year, started cycling mid-January on a carbon road bike, then after 6 weeks sold that and got an old steel tourer, fitted racks in luggage, bought the tents and camping gear, now gone from doing 15 miles, feeling exhausted, to being able to do 80 miles with 20 kilograms of gear and camping out. Done nearly 1,500 miles now and love it. I think initially there was definitely an element of seeing how hard I could go and prove I was still fit, but after a few instances of pushing too hard and feeling unwell, I calmed down and now instead of doing 20 miles as fast as possible, I do 50 miles nice and steady and just enjoy the views and the whole experience of riding in the countryside.
That's
fantastic
cool,
way
isn't
to get outdoors and enjoy fresh air and exercise.
Yep, and then Busfeet said, the social side of it is huge. It is much harder to make new friends once you get into your 40s and beyond. You join a cycling club and suddenly you've got cycling buddies. When you're out on a ride together for hours, you get a sense of camaraderie and fun that you don't get in life usually. Going on rides together for hours and having little adventures out in the countryside really brings people together and deep friendships are made.
Very true that.
Very cool that, yeah.
And underneath, I tried bikepacking with a tiny tent and this is what happened. Bonneville County, Idaho. But whenever I'm cycling all day, I focus on the Hobbit meal plan. Hobbits and cyclists traditionally enjoy 7 meals a day, which include breakfast, second breakfast, 11, it sounds like you cycle.
Yeah, this is me.
Luncheon, afternoon tea, dinner and supper, spaced roughly every 2 to 3 hours. This meal plan reflects their love for food and socialising, with each meal featuring hearty and comforting dishes. Conor Dunn is the tallest cycling hobbit in the UK.
This is literally my meal plan. The only thing sometimes is I dispense with supper. Sometimes that feels overkill.
I almost never have supper.
Do you not?
No.
Yeah. A bowl of cereal is my prime supper. Right. Chris Guarea, I think. Conor, I thoroughly enjoyed this video. You've become the GCN ambassador for bikepacking. And I can't give enough kudos to the GCN production crew. The cuts, the B-roll, the sound design, and the music selection were perfect for this video, all giving me a sense of being there on the trip with the two of you. Minus not having laughing cow for brekkie. Well done, Conor, Stefan, GCN. So thanks for that. That's fucking cool, isn't it?
It is indeed. Right then, coming up on the channel this week, I'll start on Thursday, where you've got me and Si chatting together about our independent preparation for the 7 gravel event in Australia. Not sure if we told you we're going over there this week.
Tomorrow, baby!
Yeah, but we've been talking about what training we've been doing, how we've been finding it, and there'll be a few numbers in there as well.
Well, and we're taking you along for our final shakedown rides as well, aren't we?
Yeah, we did some big rides last week.
Epic rides.
In work time.
Unbelievable
scenes.
Yeah. And mine even went on Strava.
I noticed that, yeah. I gave you some kudos.
Yeah, I saw you gave me kudos. Thanks, man. Yeah. Kudos. Right, what is coming up on the channel this week? So,
done the first bit.
Oh, yeah, good point. Then on Saturday, Conor has basically been out cycling with a living legend here in the UK. We think he's possibly the fittest 78-year-old on the planet to get some tips, basically, on how to stay fast, happy, healthy as you get older. Mm. Proper cool.
It sounds like it's going to be a fantastic video.
Yeah, well... Also, Conor got dropped on a descent. Now, Conor is no slouch at descending. No. So
he said, "Yeah, but Sid knew it better than you know. It's his home roads." Yeah, he came up with an excuse, didn't he?
He did come up with an excuse.
And it's a bit of a Conor Dunn weekend, actually. He's been very busy since he's been in that tiny tent. Because on Sunday, you might remember he was over at Veneto. He did an epic gravel ride over there. Was it a race, wasn't it?
I think it's just a ride, yeah.
Anyway, had a fantastic time. That video will be coming out on Sunday. My one worry with that video, as you know, Si, is that since he's returned from Italy, he keeps saying Veneto, and I'm slightly worried he says Veneto rather than Veneto the whole way through the video, which is going to really upset some people.
Yeah, he probably had a cappuccino after lunch as well.
Yeah.
Conor Dunn and pronunciation do not tend to go hand in hand. And I know that's cheeky coming from us, but the fact that he still can't call it a wahoo, he calls it a woohoo, I find very annoying. It's been 5 years, Conor. Dan.
A woohoo Roam.
What's your nugget, mate?
My nugget is my invention, which I think I thought about on my big pre-7 gravel ride last week.
Is this good enough to be a nugget, mate?
Well, I shall let the 19 viewers decide. So, Botter Cages, notorious over rugged terrain slash cobbles, that your bottles flip out of the Botter Cages and then you are in need of new ones, or you just go into dehydration mode. My invention side is around the Botter Cage on the inside, you have miniature wheels and they only turn in one direction. So when you put it in, it's very easy to put it in. It's much harder to tip the bottle out. Not so hard that you can't get your bottle out of the Botter Cage, but hard enough it won't slip out through vibrations and knocks.
When was the last time that you lost a water bottle through vibrations?
Well, I don't do loads of riding.
No.
But I see a lot of this happen in Paris-Roubaix, for example.
Do they still?
I don't know, now you ask me.
I was going to say, so I know 20 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, that's a real problem, that. I'm not sure that happens anymore.
They must do, surely.
No, like these new like carbon cages, like the Tapete ones we use, I literally haven't lost a bottle in...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you said that because, well, I don't want to reveal my my strategy for my bottles for the 7 Gravel just yet.
Oh, yeah?
No, we'll leave that for the actual video.
Dan's been trying to crack me by asking what my Wahoo screen strategy is.
And when
I said I didn't actually have one, he was just like,
what? That's what I thought about on my big ride last week.
Yeah.
Right, anyway, I hope that was worth it for the 11 that are now left at the end of the nugget.
Yeah.
We'll be doing the show from Australia next week.
We found a brewery overlooking the sea, I think, the GCN show next week. So that could get quite interesting,
couldn't it? Could be quite long and slurry. See you then.